When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And here we go, Digital Adele back with another Hoops Profile Beyond the Backboard podcast for you. The College to the Pros segment with my co-host, Matt Hanifin. How are you doing today, Matt?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Oh, I am doing outstanding. I appreciate you asking. Just really, really busy right now. Got a lot going on off the air and on the air, of course, as well. Tons of college hoops last night. Outstanding slate of basketball. We're going to get into a whole lot of topics. Really quick before I do, don't forget to like and subscribe for those that are watching. Become a channel member for only $2.99. Get behind the scenes access to any of our videos before they release. I know I've been a little bit slacking on that, but I will pick it up, I promise, at some point. Just been really busy. A big shout out to Stephen Fine, the very first commenter of the day. Thoughts on guard Kasparis Jakaciūnas, forward Will Riley, and center Tomislav Ivicic out of Illinois. We will definitely get to them. If you've watched any of our content in the past, Steven, or maybe I'm catching you up, Kasp is one of our favorite prospects in this draft class. Kasparis Jakaciūnas is the real deal. He is going to go very, very high, and I don't think he's going to make it past the top four. But that's my opinion. We'll talk about the others as we go along. We'll talk more about Kasp as we go along, because we are going to cover a host of different topics, such as Sports Illustrated's mock draft. We're going to cover... before that, we got to talk about Keyshawn Hall. I've talked about him 3 days in a row, three podcasts in a row, but we have to talk about him again. But before I do that, how are you doing, Matt? What are your thoughts on the college basketball season before we talk about this Sports Illustrated mock draft?
There's so much going on with college. Like I put this in our, you and I are both contributors to the Five Reasons Sports Network. There's an off-the-floor Discord that you can join where we do talk drafts, as well as many other Miami Heat center, NBA center topics.
Right.
Going on throughout the year. But, like, there's so many undrafted players that, like, I want to get to. Like, lately, I've been mostly, like, just in terms of watching it, I've mainly focused, like, toward the top because I just want to get a feel for these guys, you know, outside of Cooper, outside of Harper and Bailey.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking about it. I was like, there's so many guys, like the bottom of the second round and guys who are undrafted, like Keyshawn Hall, who I just want to, like, watch more of, who I just haven't yet. And I was like, all right, how many, we're like, what, 6 months away, 5 months away? So there's obviously still a lot of time, but.
Tons of time.
Yeah, and this is obviously, I've talked about this, like, this is the earliest that I've delved into a draft. There's so many good hoops on, like, there was so much good hoops on last night with Cooper Flagg, obviously. VJ Edgecombe versus Arizona. I got to watch a little bit of that. There's so many good basketball that you can watch, whether it's the NBA, whether it's college, whether it's like young players.
G League.
G League. There's just so many good hoops on. So.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Keyshawn Hall. Let's set that up. Did you get an opportunity to watch his 40-point outburst against Arizona State last night?
It was unfortunate. I haven't gone back to rewatch the start of it. Florida-Missouri took 17 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
To conclude, like, I don't know what happened with that, but there was, like, games were ending, like, games at the at the 9 p.m. Eastern slate, they were ending and there was still like 7 minutes left today. I was like, I don't know if it was an officiating review injury, whatever the case was.
Right.
That game took forever to end. So I wasn't able to watch to be like the first, I don't want to say like 13 minutes or so, 14 yeah. minutes, whenever it tuned into UCF or not Arizona, Arizona State. And so I was able to watch a little bit. Like I saw the rest of the first half. Keyshawn was balling, like
for sure.
He hit a corner three, and I didn't have sound on, and I didn't know how many points he had up to that point. I was just kind of like browsing around, perusing around, and there was just like, yeah, yes, like it was like 44-41 or something like that. And they showed like the little ticker on the side of the score where it was like Keyshawn Hall 29 points career high, and I was like. I had to like blink a couple of times. I was like, what? but no, he completely balled out. Again, you've belabored this point more than I have, but I don't know why he's not on big boards.
Like, it doesn't make any sense.
I don't, to me, like even at the beginning of the season, like you look at the talent over some of the, I mean, again, it just speaks to how much talent you project to be in this upcoming class. I would imagine he comes out this year.
Right.
He is what, junior, right?
Yeah, he's a junior, 20 like, years old.
Yeah, so I was like, I would imagine he comes out, but it's just weird to me. Like, I've seen, like, outside of yourself, you were one of the first guys on. I've seen like a couple people mention it, like on Twitter, like on like draft Twitter. But other than that, it's quiet. Like, I don't understand why. It certainly probably will become a little louder after last night.
Absolutely. I put a tweet out last night. The nation will know who Keyshawn Hall is after tonight's performance. I mean, it was just absolutely incredible. It wasn't just the scoring. I mean, 40 points is nice, but 13 of 18 right. from the field, 4 of 6 from 3, and then he hits all his free throws. I mean, he's outstanding. I believe he had like 6 rebounds, 5 assists or something like that also.
7 rebounds, 6 assists, 1 steal. I'm looking at his percentages. Oh, my
goodness.
I'm looking at his percentages. They're a little bit worse than I expected. But, like, again, after last night.
Well, his three-point percentage for his other two stops, he was at, like, 36%. This right. season, it's down. I don't know the cause for that. But one thing I noticed last night on his jump shot, he was getting his legs into it more, and he was following through higher, so the ball was getting a more arc on it. So I don't know if he had some bad habits that creeped in during the season and now they're fixing it. But last night he looked dynamite. Man, he had this move last night where he crossed this dude over twice and then hezied on him and then went to the basket. It was absolutely unbelievable. But he'll also post guys up. He also then had a nice post move with a nice little hop step into a jump hook. Like, the dude is a matchup nightmare. He'll also take you on the mid post, cross you up into a step back. Like, I don't know how you guard the guy. I really don't. He's a matchup nightmare at 6'7", 220.
Yeah. No, I'm 100% with you there. And again, like, I'm waiting for, like, again, we use Tankathon as, like, a frame of reference.
Yeah, that's all it is.
As well as some of these other places. And I'm just waiting for him to, like, creep up on that board. Because he's still not there. There's 78 players listed. I'm looking right now. He's still not on it. And I don't know how
it does it. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. And I haven't seen him in any of these mock drafts or ladders or tiers. I haven't seen him on any of those. Not one. Another guy that we were asked about prior was Thomas Sorber. We watched him a little bit.
Oh, my God.
And then we watched like 3 games in a row on him. And holy cow, is he impressive. Thomas Sorber. is a monster, man. His hands are elite. He is strong as heck. I mean, he's a freshman and he pushes people around like they're like children. And I mean, it's unfortunate he hurt his elbow last night, but man, is he good. He's an old school type of big, but he's got a little bit better feet than you would think for an old school big. Beautiful touch around the basket. Uses his body and frame well. Great communicator, always communicating on the back line of that defense. And he's the go-to guy for Georgetown. I loved what I've seen from Sorber. What about yourself?
Oh, no, yeah, pretty much took everything that I want to say out of my mouth. Like, his verticality, too. Like, his coordination defensively. Like, yeah, they do. Georgetown does run this, like, 2-3 zone pretty often, like, most of the time, more often than not. And so he's kind of forced to communicate on that back line. But, like, his verticality around the rim, like, he does a tremendous job, at least in my opinion, defending without fouling. Or at least, like, staying straight up without fouling against some of these other, like, bigs and people who are, you know, driving to the rim trying to. And, like, his coordination in terms of, like, blocking shots at a high enough rate without fouling is very, very impressive as well. Like, he again, does a good job standing straight up. He doesn't move in the sense that where, like, he's not jumping into players as they're, like, attacking them. Like, I know some bigs do that. Like, they're trying to block a shot and they jump straight into a guy. And again, like, that's a foul.
Yep.
He doesn't do that. He just goes straight up. He's 6'10". I don't know what his standing reach is going to be. But I feel like he has pretty good length for someone of his size. Like,
oh, yeah, he does.
And so that's impressive in itself. His playmaking, too. Like, I know there was a couple passes yesterday, especially early in that St. John's game, to where there were a couple errant passes. But I think, like, his playmaking out of the mid-post above the break, like, he does a good job directing traffic in the half court. And that's something to me that's really impressive. Like, I know he's not someone who's, like, your typical floor spacer. Like, he's shooting 15% from three. I'm a believer in his long-term shooting touch just because of his free throw. And, like, he has good touch when he shoots free throws. But
I think his mid-range, Jay.
Yeah, I think that's more so going to come with time. Like, I think that's something that's going to develop within, the first few years of him being in the league and not this year specifically. But I am, like, a believer in that. But, like, he still does a good job, like, directing traffic and, you know, making different kinds of passes, especially out of double teams. Like, there are times on the low block where he's in the low post or the mid post where he'll get a double one pass away, or someone weak side will double him. And, like, he does a good job locating teammates and open teammates and putting good velocity on passes, good accuracy on passes. Like, there are a couple times where he passes, he'll miss high sometimes, but, like, he still does a good job, like, you know, locating those guys and not being, you know, too, he's not someone who's rattled or anything like that. Like, he does a good job with that. And, like, I think for him, from a strength perspective, I think you're a little bit higher on his strength than I am. I still think there's times where he'll get pushed off a spot. But I think he does a good job playing through physicality. Like, he doesn't back down from that kind of challenge. He does a good job playing through it, staying controlled, poised, especially when he's going up for his shot. Like, I think that the book on him, like, you've seen teams like UConn, Marquette, Xavier, St. John's, like, they're going to be extra physical with them, and that's the kind of league that the Big East is. And so that's something that he's just going to have to adapt to more over time. But, like, he does an excellent job of playing through physicality, and I think that's something he's still trying to learn. But, like, again, he's 18, 19 years old already. So it's like he's doing that at such a young age.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Relative to his age, he's super strong relative to his age. That's the point.
Right. Like, you see bigs, you know, I don't want to throw his name out there, but, like, Khalil Ware, like, they're just not, like, bigs who are young and in college aren't typically, they don't have the core strength. They don't have the upper body strength, the lower body strength. And I think Sorber, like, he's far from a finished product in that area, but he is stronger than most of the guys that at least we've evaluated over the last few seasons who play that same position.
I agree. I need him versus Malawach right now. Give me Georgetown versus Duke right now in the NCAA tournament. I need to see the matchup.
We can talk about Malawach later. I have some takes.
I love it. We're going to get to it in the Sports Illustrated. You'll be able to get to all these guys. Because I want to bring up Kasperis Jakaciūnas again as well, because I tweeted out after watching him yesterday, I don't need to do any more evaluating until a tournament. He's elite. We just need to be able to see how elite he is.
Right.
So
he's really good. I know we're going to at some point do our big boards again, our top 30. We could probably do that at a future date.
Or do you want to do the tier list first? Or do you want to do the tier list first? Which one?
I it doesn't matter to me.
We honestly can do the tiers. We'll do tiers first, and then we'll go back and update our big board after we do our tiers.
But okay.
What was your take?
Well, I was just going to say, I moved him above Ace.
Ooh.
I officially made the decision. I moved him above Ace.
He does more things. That's right, for sure.
No, that's not a knock on Ace. I've made my thoughts on Ace somewhat well documented at this point.
Yes, you said he's 5'9".
Yeah. Midget. Ace Bailey. No. But I finally made that decision. I had him at 4. I had him in the 4-5 range for a while.
Yeah.
But.
All right. Well, let me post this link so our people can follow along. And we'll get into this Sports Illustrated article.
Look, that first name is spicy.
Yeah, let's get right into it. The very first one. Ooh, actually, I'm struggling, dude. I was doing too much today. Now my core hurts. Are we on the same article? Who's the first name? Tell me.
The meme.
Oh my God, we're two different articles. Send me the one you're on.
Okay. Let me pull it up again.
Is it the main? Because I'm showing Cooper flagged in New Orleans.
Well, you sent me risers and fallers.
Oh, I did the wrong one. All right, risers and fallers. My bad. Oh, I see it. I got it. Don't worry about it. I found it. All right. Okay. So this is risers and fallers. Ignore the other link. I'm going to post this one in the chat instead. There it is.
First name on the big board, Will Riley.
So Jaeger Denman, previously number 6 overall, currently number 9. He's fallen off because of his injury. His injury has clearly affected his play. Talk to me about what you think is going on with Denman.
To me, he doesn't look. I've been only able to watch a couple of games since his return, so I don't have like the full scope as
right.
Well as most of these guys on this list. To me, he doesn't have the same explosiveness. Not that he had incredible burst, and he was able to create advantages at will on the half court beforehand.
Right. Right.
But he just, to me, like, it feels like he's having to work extra hard to get downhill to create any advantage that he wants to create. There's some like secondary stuff to where like he'll catch it and he'll attack a closeout and whatnot, and he'll still get downhill in that way.
Yeah.
But like the playmaking's still awesome. But to me, he's not as explosive. And then like I think the knee is barking at him a little bit, like it was in 92 seconds. Roughly a month.
My bad.
that was the sound of Adele. That was the sound that the Means knee made.
That is exactly the sound that the Means knee made. Hopefully he gets better soon because he's too talented to be saddled with injury.
Yeah, but to me, like he just hasn't gotten his knees under him, and like open shot, contested shot, whatever it is, they're not falling in. I talked to you about this a little bit off air. I still have no idea how much of the knee it can like contribute to something like that, but I think it's clearly taken some sort of effect on his percentages. Like the passing's still awesome. It's just the shot, the finishing, the ability to create advantages. It's still not quite there.
Right.
And that will have a clear effect on his draft stock, whether it's fair, unfair, whatever. So that's kind of what I've taken away from this most recent stretch. And again, like this is the time of year where the evaluation is going to be even more important because it's conference play, it's Big 12 play. Like whether knee, injury, whatever, like that, I think evaluators are going to take that sample that you get. They're going to weight it more heavily than they did early in the season when he's facing teams like Wyoming, when he's facing teams like Idaho. You know what I mean? Like, it's just
I agree 1,000%, man. 1,000%.
It's a different game. So, like, again, regardless of the injury, like how he plays here is going to be most important, whether he's fully healthy or not. So yeah, it's just that's something to worth mentioning.
No, I couldn't agree with you more, man, because these games later in the season, conference play and into the tournament, that really matters more. And if BYU doesn't get in the tournament, he could really fall. I mean, the talent's there, but we'll see. The next one was Jeremiah Fears, was previously number 30, moved all the way up to number 12 for Sports Illustrated. And I would like to say, I agree with him moving up. I don't know how he was that low to begin with. But he's had a really rough stretch. The last three games have been rough. And that's mainly due to the physicality. He's not stepping up to the challenge that is the physicality of SEC ball. And that's something the evaluators are really going to want to see, because he's quick as a hiccup. But if his three-point shot isn't falling, you got to be able to get in the lane and mix it up. So I'm really disappointed with this three-game stretch from Fears. So something to monitor, watch closely. It's not the end of his story, but we'll see. What are your thoughts?
I did watch the Alabama one. I still want to go back and watch the Texas A&M and Georgia one. I need to watch more of Fears, because he was someone who just wasn't on my radar at the start of the season. I mean, now that he's, you know, climbing up these boards, I mean, he'll play Trey Johnson tonight, which is pretty cool.
Right.
We're recording this on January 15th. From what I saw specifically in that Alabama game against Phylon, like the level of physicality kind of overwhelmed him a bit, and he got off to a really, really, really bad start. He has great size. He has, he's not a bad playmaker by any stretch.
Right.
And he, like, you can see some of the shooting, I think, is there. It just hasn't fallen for him. He's shooting 27.9% from three this season. That's 16.7% in three conference games. SEC is just brutal this year. Like, it's you're just talking
physically brutal. Yeah, it's like,
right, like physical. It's gonna be, it's a war on a night to night basis in that conference. And so I'm very interested to see, like, this isn't like, if you just told me this was something that would have happened to him, like right after non-conference play, like I would have expected it. But now it's just, how does he respond from that? Because this is something that he's going to have to adjust to over time. He's got good size to him. It's not like he's like a small guard or anything like that. Like, he's got good size, 6'4", 185, 190, like, that's not terrible size. And so I'm just very interested to see how someone like him responds from that challenge, because there's still a lot of conference play left.
Absolutely. Tons of time left. Let's see what happens for young Jeremiah Fears. Next up, we have your favorite, Larry Bird. I mean, Danny Wolf, previously not rated, currently moved all the way up to number 17. And to be honest with you, I need to watch him more. I only seen that one game. I was intrigued, but I haven't actually broke him down for the three or four or five games necessary to get a full picture. How much have you watched Danny Bird, and what are your thoughts?
Danny Bird. I'm trying to remember. There was one game earlier in the season. It was against Arkansas.
That was it.
That I watched, and I messaged you, and I was like, you need to watch this guy. Like,
you did. You said it.
He's like 6'11", 7 foot. They run like a 4-5 pick and roll with him as like a primary ball handler, and like, he's good out of that.
Right.
Because they run it with him and Vlad Golden, who was formerly at Florida Atlantic, where Dusty May previously was before the season.
Right.
But he's got a very intriguing skill set, just from, like, he's got guard skills. He's a very good rebounder. They'll put him at the post sometime. Like, I haven't watched too many games, so from probably like two or three. He'll be like a primary and secondary initiator. He's a phenomenal rebounder for someone of his size. He can shoot the three a little bit. Like, he's shooting 35% from three on three attempts per game. Like, There's some floor spacing that he's got, but like he's just got like he's got the guard skills, he's got the feel, the passing feel, whether he's in the post, whether he's above the break, whether he's, you know, initiating pick and roll for someone at 6'10", 6'11". Like he's someone that I'm very intrigued by. I want to watch more of him too. And I mean, he's a junior this season. I don't know if he's going to be, you know, flying up boards. I know this freshman class is loaded.
Yeah, they got him at 17. That's crazy.
Yeah. And like, yeah, this freshman class is loaded. So I'm very like interested to see like where his stock falls when it's all said and done. But he's got a very, very intriguing skill set. And he's pretty mobile. Like he's nimble for, at least from what I can recollect, like he's somewhat nimble for a guy of his size. And so
he does not move like a 7-footer.
Yeah. Like he doesn't move like a, yeah. And so I want to watch more of him too. But just from the stuff that I've seen so far, he's got a very intriguing skill set. Although I think his efficiency has dipped fairly recently.
Let me give you some numbers. And this is where, when you're evaluating a prospect, you need to pay attention to this stuff. The previous season, he shot 47% from the field. This season, he's shooting 56, almost 57%. That jump is a big indicator of growth. 3-point percentage went from 34%. Well, it's still at 34%. So it's pretty stagnant. And then the rebounding went from 9.7 rebounds per game to 10.1. That's consistency. His assist went from 2.4 all the way up to almost 4 a game, 3.9. That's huge in terms of growth. His blocking, you know, block shots are consistent. Now, I will say, when we start talking about primary initiator and facilitator, we got to be very careful with that. Because he also turns the ball over like 4 a game. Like, you can't average 4 assists a game and turn it over 4 times a game. You're not going to be a primary initiator at the next level doing that. So I think at the next level, it translates to secondary initiator more than primary. But yeah, man, I'm very intrigued. I can't wait to watch him more. Now, how was Ian Jackson on their last board not rated? How?
Was this before the season?
I have no clue. No clue, to be honest. But he's up to number 23. What are your thoughts on that positioning for Ian Jackson?
I think it's pretty fair. I think I have him a little higher on my personal board. Yeah. His shot making, like his catch and shoot shooting, his ability to create off the dribble. Like, again, he's more of like a secondary initiator in my eyes. Like, something I want to see from him a little bit more is like him in the pick and roll and him having those primary duties. So I'm curious to see like how he looks. Right. And I don't know if that's something that Hubert Davis is going to put on his plate, you know, with Cadeau, with RJ Davis, with some of their other guards there. But his ability to create off the dribble, just like attacking closeouts, and his ability to break a dude down in isolation, his just pure shot making to me is something that's really impressive. He's good in transition. He's not a bad defender. He's shown flashes of it. There's some times where he'll get lost off the ball.
Yeah.
And that's something where it's like, I just wonder if that comes, you know, with more experience.
Right.
And whatnot. But he, like his, I think his finishing, at least it, I don't know what the numbers say. It's looked good, or it's better than like someone of his size I would expect it to look. But no, he's been so much fun to watch, and like I feel like they're adding more to his plate as time goes on. And like, now that defenses, I think we've talked about this before, now that he's been one of their best players, if not their best player so far this season, like defenses are gonna tailor stuff to him, and he's gonna be on the scouting report, even though even if he's not getting the ball handling responsibility that a Cadeau or an RJ Davis will get. Like he's gonna be moving up scouting. Like scouting reports on a game by game basis.
And I just wonder how
he adjusts to that.
No, that'll be That's a great point and a great call out. And I can't wait to see how he takes on that challenge and if he can meet that challenge. One big thing I'd like to see from Ian Jackson Moore is, you know, getting to the free throw line because he's such a good shooter.
Yeah,
I would love to see his free throw rate go up. But moving on, we also had another not rated. Carter Bryant from the Arizona Wildcats went up to number 28. Have you watched any Carter Bryant?
I've watched like a game or two. Like it to me, the game I watched was when I was looking at Lewis. Let me try to figure out what that was. To me, like he still looks very raw.
That was the word I had in my brain just now. Super raw offensively.
Yeah, they ran some like rim running stuff for him because I mean he is to me like he's like a fairly athletic forward. You know, he can defend. They were having him defend a few different positions defensively, like, but he's still very raw. And so that was like, I don't know if he's a guy that's going to come out this year. I know he had a breakout game recently. I didn't watch that game.
Right.
But it was against TCU, the one I watched. So that was New Year's Eve.
The Horned Frogs.
Yeah. Yeah, because that was a game where Caleb Love went off, and I thought Caleb Love had different percentages, or I was curious, and it was the same exact percentages.
Let me ask you this. So they list their full top 30. They've done with their risers. They have Cooper, Flagg, Harper, Bailey, Kasper, Siakachonis, Troy, and then Malawach. I know you haven't watched Nolan yet. Talk to me about Kasper, Siakachonis, and Malawach, because I know you got takes on those guys.
I mean, again, Siakachonis is a guy who, like, he can do a little bit of everything. I know the turnovers have been a concern for some people, but he can shoot it. He's got legit range. He can run an offense. He's very, I think more as the season's gone on, like I know he was injured for a little bit. He's gotten more crafty with his playmaking. Because I know there were certain points at the beginning of the season where like, you know, a lot of his stuff was just, it was more simple.
Pick and pop. It was all pick and pop. Yep.
Yeah. And so like, I think like now, I think the reads and the passes that he's making are becoming a little more advanced. He's got a nose for the ball. Like he's an excellent, excellent rebounding guard. I think he's good at the point of attack defensively. He knows angles. He's very strong and sturdy for a guy of his age. And he just looks like a guy that's been like, I know he, I don't remember. What league did he come from, Europe?
I can't remember which league he was from in Europe. I don't remember. I apologize.
But he looks like a bigger, stronger
FC Barcelona. Player. FC Barcelona.
Okay, so yeah, I want to say it was the Spanish league, but I didn't want to be incorrect there. So that was so like he's developed, I think, more into like an all around player. Like there isn't very little things on a basketball court that Siakachonis doesn't do like well,
and that includes defensively.
Right, that includes defensively, and so that's something that I love. I think the more I watch Malawach, the more I fall in love with the prospect and the potential. And that's more so like a recent thing.
Yeah.
More so is because I know at the beginning of the season, we had concerns about like him offensively and like the engagement and everything. These last few games from him, he's just been a complete monster. And, he, you know, 7'2". I've made the joke before that his standing reach is taller than the Empire State Building. Like, the dude has freakish length. John Shire's using him in multiple coverages defensively. Like there's times where he'll switch. There's times where he'll play higher up on the screen. There's times where he's like a drop big.
Right.
But I think in all three of those coverages, he's becoming more comfortable and like he's more engaged defensively too. I think he's been more active on the glass recently. I know last night he pulled down 15 rebounds against Miami, which I think was a season high for him.
It was a season high.
Or a career high for him. Because I know he had 14 against Army earlier in the season. But, like, to me, I know a lot of his buckets offensively aren't self-created, and I know that's a concern that very, very it justified. It's a very justified concern
relative to his draft projected draft position. Correct.
Right. But he's a guy to where, like, I think he can. That's something that he may have the potential to develop offensively, just like, you know, within 10 feet of the basket. His touch around the rim is fantastic. And yeah. I know part of that is, you know, they're just throwing lobs up to him. I'm okay with that if I'm taking a flyer on him in the lottery, top 10, whatever. Maybe not top five. I don't think he'd be a top five pick. And I don't know if that's ever going to be like his ceiling in terms of his draft position. But like, if he's a guy with that kind of length, he's not going to turn 19 until September.
Right.
So he's still going to be 18 on draft night. I think Shire's done a good job up to this point of developing him from the start of the season until now. And I'm willing to take a flyer on him, you know, in that 10-ish lottery range, even though we still have questions about him offensively. If he just can continue to do what he's doing and stack those games, stack those days.
Did you watch him play?
What we've seen lately is awesome.
Did you watch him play during the Olympics?
No.
Okay. Because he played really, really well for Sudan in the Olympics as well. Like, he was terrific. That team was really, really good. Very competitive. Gave the U.S. a run for their money at some point.
Oh, wait. I mean, I remember I watched all the U.S. games. We did those on playback, but I don't remember him specifically now.
Gotcha.
Like, I wasn't, like, locked into what he was doing specifically, I guess I should say.
Let me see if I can pull up some of those stats. MaloWatch, Olympics.
He's so big.
Yeah, like, his wingspan is like, he's like a 747 dude.
It's crazy. Like, just throw it up anywhere around the top corners of the backboard and he'll go up and get it. Like, he's got really good hands too, I think. And he's done a better job cleaning up misses and cleaning up like missed out. Like, he's so big.
So he didn't play a lot.
If he could tap into his skill set just a little bit more,
right?
Like, if Shire can just add a little bit more to his plate, and he can, you know, parlay that at some point. Like, to me, I think how he does as a rookie and his what he does I think it's going to be situation dependent.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you're going to need a guy who, you know, a solid point guard. Like, I sent this to you before. Before we logged on, but CBS Sports, they released a mock today. I beg your pardon. I don't remember who exactly did it, but they had him going 13 to Houston. And I was like, yeah, that's a perfect spot for him.
Perfect spot. Yeah. That'd be a great landing spot,
especially if they keep Fred. Like, that's an excellent landing spot as a guy who can, like, set him up. He doesn't have to, doesn't have much pressure to start right away. I don't know what Steven Adams's contract situation looks like, but I know he's coming off the books, I think, fairly soon.
Yes.
So he could just back up Şengün. Like, I think that's a great spot for him.
Well, let me ask you this, because after MaloWatch, we have VJ Edgecombe, Con Knipple, who absolutely shot the lights out at Duke yesterday. Yeah. Like, 25 points on theirs, like, almost all threes, but... Yeah, his playmaking is so underrated. His ability to get in the lane, facilitate, cause those hockey assists, all that stuff. Knipple, Denman, or Trey Johnson, who you got?
Who would I take?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a tough question.
Okay, Alex. That's a tough question.
I would lean Con. I think I have him, I think, one spot ahead of Trey Johnson on my board. Or, no, I think I have Con one spot behind Trey Johnson, but that's like neck and neck. That's another one that I flip back and forth on.
I know. K2 is tough, and Trey Johnson's leadership and his shot making are both elite. But I think Knipple, in the end, I think it depends on what you need. I think Knipple does more as a connector piece. And yeah. Johnson's more of a lead guy, like a 2A type, 1A potential.
Yeah.
So it's tough. That's really tough.
I can't. What I've seen from Knipple defensively, I think that would give him the edge.
I know, man. It's surprising how good he is defensively.
Yeah.
Because his foot speed isn't that. He makes up for it all with his smarts.
Right. His foot speed isn't great.
And he's built like a tank. You run into, just like Sorber.
Yeah.
You run into him and you just crash and like, oh my God, what the heck?
That's the same thing with Casperus.
Yes. Well, Casp is, he's got definition. Like, he's built like Captain America. Liam McNeely, Jeremiah Fears. I'm going to skip Ben Scarf and Hugo Gonzalez because I know you haven't watched them.
Mm-hmm.
So Liam McNeely, Jeremiah Fears, Asa Newell. Who you got?
I promised the viewers I will watch the international guys at some point. Just don't know when that will be. I would lean Asa.
I know. Newell, I think Sports Illustrated's really underrating how good that guy is. To have him all the way at 15 is crazy to me. And Liam McNeely is a good shooter, but that's literally like almost all he is a good shooter.
I've seen stuff. I want to go back and watch it, but I've seen stuff before his injury. They were putting the ball in his hands more and having him create.
Who, Liam?
So I want to, yeah. I'm not saying I've seen it yet, but I want to go back and watch some of that tape before I completely agree or disagree.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
I have seen that they were putting the ball in his hands a little bit more and having him create.
I would love to see.
I'm throwing that out there. I'm not saying it's true. I'm not saying it's untrue. I'm just saying that's what I've seen on the beautiful interwebs.
The always right internet. They're always right, never wrong.
Never once.
I got one more what if for you, and then we're going to move on and wrap up the show. We have Ian Jackson, LeBaron Filon, Boogie Fland, Darren Reed. Who you got?
Boogie.
Oh, dude, you missed the joke. It was going to be Darren Reed. Your guy.
The guy who went viral for not running back in transition.
That's probably not going to be in the, you know, in the first round at all. They have at 27.
I mean, I've seen some of the Alabama games that I have watched. Like, he's done some things specifically, you know, on the interior around the rim. Like, he is like, I think he plays bigger than he actually is.
Oh, yeah.
But I would not have him in the top 30.
Definitely not. I don't see any way he makes it in the top 30. And I don't see how Cam Jones goes all the way down at 29. I don't see that as a possibility either.
I'm going to be so mad if Cam Jones, like, I remember seeing this that I may have said it on here. I'm going to be so mad if he falls in like that Boston.
Oh, my God.
Oklahoma. I'm going to be so unbelievably mad from like a Heat fan perspective if that happens.
He'll end up in Cleveland. Or like Orlando. Something like that. Just to make the Heat's life miserable. Yeah, yeah. Memphis would be a great landing spot for him. But yeah, man.
So they have him. Tankathon has him 20 to Dallas.
Oh, I like his fit in Dallas.
Rob
Dillingham, or if he goes to like Minnesota and like takes Rob Dillingham's minutes.
Why you gotta do that to Rob? No. Does Minnesota even have a pick?
I have no clue. I haven't looked at who has picks and who doesn't, to be honest. Let me ask you this. Stephon Castle playing well again. Yes.
Hey, didn't he have like 23-6 or something like that against the Lakers?
He did.
4?
Yep. What do you think it was the cause of that? Do you think they were resting him because it's a long, grueling season and he's young and they want to, you know, make sure he doesn't hit that rookie wall? What do you think was the cause for his bounce back?
I'm looking at inactives to make sure there wasn't any notable ones. Like, Sohan didn't play. I wonder if, because I know, like, it's been weird. Like, they've kind of taken him in and out of the starting lineup.
Right.
Like, I don't know if it's a complete, like, they're saving him, but I don't have a great theory for you, if I'm being completely honest with you.
I mean, I think,
because it's weird to me, like, he's been super impactful when he's played, regardless of how many minutes he's gotten. I know the shot, outside of the shooting, at least from, like, beyond the arc, hasn't been good. That's been, like, the high 20s all season.
Yeah, his shooting's been bad.
And that was also a problem at UConn, to an extent. But in terms of, like, how impactful he is, he's been impactful, especially defensively on the glass. I think finishing around the rim, you know, getting downhill, being a good facilitator. And so I kind of hope he stays in the rotation. I mean, he's going to stay in the rotation, duh. But, like, I hope he's going to get, like, 25, 30 minutes. I don't know if it's saving him for, like, the rookie wall, because obviously you play him 36 minutes against the Lakers in January 13th, and he gets nearly 25 points.
Yep.
So I don't know if there, like, is a rookie wall for him outside of just if he just doesn't shoot the ball well. But I still think there's ways that he can impact a game to where he won't necessarily hit that wall.
And it doesn't really take into account all the defensive stuff he does either.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, I think him as a playmaker and him as a defender is going to keep him. It should keep him in the rotation for that amount of time. And I feel like I'm very interested to see what San Antonio does at the deadline. Because.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's. I don't know what they really need, actually. And that's more so me just not knowing the Spurs as a whole, like what they're trying to do. Because I know, like, they're in, like, a play-in contention spot,
right?
And I know there's probably mixed opinion on whether they want to win now with Victor, or whether they want to push it for another season, or whatever the case is. I would imagine they want to make the playoffs this year. At least they're considering how close they are to it. But I don't know, like, what moves, like. Is Harrison Barnes going to be out the door? Like, what's going to happen there? Because I know he's one of their bigger contracts that they have. And, like, what are they trying to get?
Well, they want to win. Supplement. So on the Five Reasons Sports Network, Ethan did report, based on what they think is Wemby's timeline for health, they want to win now as much as possible. Like, that's San Antonio's outlook. I don't want to speak for Ethan, but I'm just repeating what he told on air to everybody about Wemby. But one thing I want to point out with Stephon Castle, people don't realize, even though his shooting percentages are really poor, when he decides to get to the rim, he's averaging like 63% 0 to 3 feet. When he gets to the rim, it's a bucket.
Right.
So I think he needs to learn to the NBA game a little bit more, to not settle for those fadeaways and those jumpers. And he just needs to keep attacking. But yeah, so I wanted to ask you that. And then we're going to close with this because we are draft evaluating. We do this every year. We break down these prospects. We make our big boards. We went against what the experts said about the 2024 draft. Historically, they said it's going to be the worst draft class of all time. That was what they said. You don't want any picks. Trade away your picks. Worst draft class of all time. The worst draft class of all time. Hopefully I don't get copyright striked for that. So just to let the audience know what happened, I've tied my sound effects to my keyboard or my number pad. So if I accidentally press the number pad, a sound effect will play. Like this. So that's what's happening when that goes on. But anyway, so historically, the 2013 draft and then, like, the year, I believe, 2000 draft are, like, historically the worst drafts of all time. Like, I mean, historically bad. Not the 2013. Sorry, that's the Durant draft. Let me see if I can find it.
Durant was like 2007. What do you mean?
No, he was 2000. Let me see. Hold on, bro.
It was, I thought 13 was the Bennett one.
It was Damian Lillard, Kevin Durant, Monty Ellis. Oh no. What is this? It pulled up stats, dude. That's not what I was trying to do.
So let's say Kevin Durant was not drafted in 2013.
I didn't think so either. But then, you know, the internet was. See, this is why you don't trust the internet, guys. draft. There it is. There it is. Now we got it.
Yeah, I was going to say it was the Bennett.
This is the Anthony Bennett draft. Yeah, so it was the Anthony Bennett, Victor Oladipo, Cody Zeller, Otto Porter, Alex Len, Nerlens Noel, Ben McLemore, Caldwell Pope, Trey Burke, McCollum, Michael Carter, Steven Adams, Olynyk, Giannis, Schroeder, Shane Larkin, Lucas Nogoria? I don't know. Shabazz Muhammad. A bunch of players that aren't in the league anymore.
No gear. I think that's who I remember him.
Yeah, that guy. So
at least Giannis was in this class.
Right. So there's one or maybe like a handful of players that stuck in the league. Hold on. Let me get the 2000 NBA draft pulled up because I think that's the other one. I'm pretty sure. 2000 NBA draft class. All right, here we go. Check out these names. Yeah, Kenyon Martin went number one. He was okay. He was a good role player in the league. Stromal Swift went number two. Another semi-decent role player.
I don't even know who that is.
Stromal! That's who I compare Noah Clowney to. He's a less athletic, a little bit better shooter, Stromal Swift.
Just to give viewers some perspective, I was born when this draft was happening. So some of these names that Adele is about to say, no recollection of any of these guys in the league.
Are you calling me old, bruh?
I'm just telling the people the truth.
Anyway, Darius Miles, Marcus Fizer, Mike Miller. That's a good one. You know him.
Oh, yeah.
Dermar Johnson, Chris Mim. Jamal Crawford, you know him.
I know who Mim is, too.
Joel Prisbilla, Keon Dooling, Jerome Mimoso? I don't know. Eton Thomas, Courtney Alexander, Mateen Cleaves, Jason Collier, Hidiu Turkoglu.
Turkoglu is a good one.
It is. But if you look at the names in that draft, maybe a handful of them made it. Like, made a meaningful impact. Those two drafts, the 2013-2000 draft, are considered the worst draft classes in NBA history. Do you believe the 2024 draft is the worst draft class in NBA history compared to those? Yes or no?
Considering we've only gotten a few months, probably not. But it also goes to the point, like, something that I was saying a bunch pre-draft, something you were saying a bunch pre-draft, it's only flat at the top.
Exactly.
It's only flat at the top. There's plenty of role players intermixed in this draft that I think are going to be good, solid NBA players. I don't know if I'm going to put like an all-star projection on these guys yet, because again, we're still very, very, very early in this entire thing. But just again, like guys like Misi, guys like Castle, guys like Klingon, guys like even like guys like Zach Edey. Like, they're going to be impactful players. Kinect was another one that we liked a lot who fell. I'm just looking throughout the list. Like
Alex Sarr.
Jalen Wells, for example, is a guy who's popped in the second round.
Well, like Alex Sarr, do you think he's going to bust out?
No.
Reed Sheppard, is he going to bust out? Not like...
Well, not a great start to his career, but well, there's still way too much time.
Well, there's a backlog of players at his same position. Like, you're not going to sit Fred VanVleet while he's making like $40 million. You're not sitting Jalen Green. You know what I mean? Like, there's too many players in front of him. Steph Castle, I don't think he's going to bust out. Holland could very well bust out. We said that before the draft. We talked about that extensively.
I think I was higher on Holland than you were, though.
Oh, yeah. I had him in the Scoot Henderson category. But he's talented, but...
Yeah.
The basketball IQ, woof.
Yeah.
Tajdan Salawan, I can see a solid role player for 15 years. I don't see All-Star or anything like that, but I think he's going to be a solid contributor for a long time. As long as the mountain that is Donovan Klingit can stay healthy, I think he's going to be a meaningful contributor. Dillingham could bust out. Edie could bust out. Cody Williams could bust out. Matas, I think, is actually going to be better than people think. Topic, I think, is going to be dynamite if he can stay healthy.
Carter, there's so many players there, though.
Oh, Matas?
No, Topic.
Yeah, I mean, he may not necessarily play for the Thunder, but he's going to play for somebody.
Yeah, he's going to play for someone. Yeah.
Devin Carter is going to be a solid role player for a long time. Bub's got a bright future. Ware, just on talent alone, could stick for 10 years. Jared McCain, outstanding offensive player. Connect, De Silva. You see where I'm going with this? We haven't even gotten to Misi yet. There's no way this draft class, to me, has a chance of being as bad as those classes. We'll see in 2 to 3 years, but I just don't see it happening. Our guy, Stephen Fine, says, if Holland can shoot, he'll be a great player. Now, he didn't use the word great, so I don't... Stephen, can you clarify? Will he be just a good role player, or do you think he'll be a... We'll do it like this. A 1A type player, 2A type player, or a 3? Like,
it's a sizable if, regardless. He's shooting 80% from the free throw line on very low volume.
But I have more concerns than just his shooting. Right. Like, his basketball IQ. Like, that guy will throw passes into the fifth row. His defense will be bad. He'll go 1-on-5. I don't know, man. He says good player. Not great player, so good player. Perhaps. I could see that. That's reasonable.
Yeah, I was going to say perhaps.
That's reasonable. I'm much lower on him than Matt is, though. I'm much lower than him on Matt. But I will close on a positive note, because I do root for all of these players, regardless of my opinion of their game. One thing I will always do is stay true to the game. So if I know a person or not know a person, like a person, not like a person, I'm always going to give you my honest opinion on their game. And so we got to show some love to Scoot Henderson. For the first time in 2 seasons, he put together an outstanding performance. Like 36 points or something like that. High efficiency game. Let me pull these stats up for
39, Scoot. 6 on 13 of 18 shooting, 8 of 10 from 3.
Wow, that's sufficient. What do the turnovers look like?
4 turnovers.
I mean, that's typical Scoot. Typical Scoot. But no, that's good. I want to give him his flowers where it's due, man. But with that, Matt, tell the people where they can find you, follow you, and get more of your work.
You can find me at NPH_A24_. You can find me there on Twitter. Still not on Blue Sky yet. I will need to change the handle at some point. So that will eventually happen. Still have no idea when. I'm just procrastinating, prolonging the inevitable at this point, as some of the kids might say.
That's right, you 25-year-old man.
Yeah, 25 year. Yeah. almost 25.
Almost. Oh, man. Jesus.
You can almost hothoops.com, mountainwestconnection.com, vendettasportsmedia.com. Those are the places where you can find me, as well as playback.tv/5RSN. Where Adele and myself and others from the 5 Reasons Sports Network will talk about the Miami Heat, watch the Miami Heat, cry about the Miami Heat.
A lot of that lately.
Throw Jimmy Butler trade rumors into the abyss and see, just imagine for 5 seconds what those would look like.
Absolutely. Yeah, man, I appreciate you, Matt, as always. I'm Digital Adele. You can find me on social media, Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram, any of those places under Digital Adele. I'm also the founder of Hoops Profile, the channel you're watching right now. Get all your breakdowns. Become a channel member for only $2.99 a month if you want to support the show. You can listen to these podcasts back on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, anywhere you find podcasts. As well on YouTube under the 5 Reasons NBA, or no, on podcast under the 5 Reasons NBA channel. At a later date, we'll have them there as well. So I do appreciate everybody. Don't forget to like and subscribe. I'll see you next time.